Hello, and thank you for tuning in yet again to the Attack and Release Show. My name is Matt, and I'm joined by my good friend from Nashville, Sam, the Sam Moses. Today, we're going to be talking about mastering strategies and if you should stay in the box or if you should seek alternate analog alternatives and convert out of the box. So you wanna hop into this one, Sam?
Let's do it, Matt.
Perfect.
That was
good. You are now Sam, the Sam Moses, by the way.
I love it.
I had a friend who called me Matt the Matt Garber. So
Matt the Matt Garber.
Yeah.
Matt the Matt Garber.
That's it. Okay, so Sam, in mastering you have, or really just in mixing, production,
yeah,
engineering, et cetera, you have several different ways that you can go about your craft. You can, but primarily it's all dumbed down to two areas. You have, do I stay in the box? Do you operate like completely on plugins and, I mean, solely based on your computer's processing? Or
yeah,
do you rely on external gear to help you along, to turn those ones and zeros into a sine wave and turn some knobs?
Yes.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about like the pros and cons of staying in the box and the pros and cons of staying out of the box.
Yeah.
And I figured I'm primarily, for people who don't know, I'm primarily in the box looking for analog alternatives and going a little bit more of a hybrid route. And
yeah,
Sam, for quite a while, you've been primarily out of the box. You don't you use a couple plugins, but not too many, from what I understand.
Yeah, I mainly work out of the box. I do everything that'll say matters out of the box for my workflow and what I'm going for. And then
everything that matters.
That's, I mean, it is like for me, how I approach things and the sound I try to create and give people, that comes from my outboard gear. And then with the plugins, those are more like surgical or repair, and then getting stuff up to kind of, you know, where stuff needs to be for digital platforms. So yeah, I mainly work out of the box, but I mean, I started fully in the box and I was in the box for years. And so I don't really have a preference, other than now that I've worked out of the box for a while, I've become accustomed to that. But there's also been projects where I don't need to go out of the box to achieve what I'm looking for. If someone's recorded something really well and mixed it really well, and it has kind of all the analog mojo that people kind of want from mastering, I feel like I won't take it out of the box because I don't want to screw that up. Because anytime you take something from the computer and take it out and convert it through analog gear and then back in, you are changing what was there, which we can get into that later. But yeah, I really enjoy working out of the box. For me, it's more creative because it's hands-on, so I enjoy that. If anything, maybe
definitely,
I do it for myself, you know? Not that my clients, I don't know if my clients honestly would know if I'm in the box or out of the box, which is fine. They don't have to. That's not their job, you know? It's my job to use the tools and pick the tools, be it a plugin or hardware, that I think will get them the best end product. So that's kind of like my overall thoughts on it. But for you, Matthew, like you're pretty much all in the box, and you like that as of now. And I know you're trying to.
I don't really think I have a choice whether I like it.
That's
or don't,
true.
But
you're doing good work with it, you know.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
For me, it's primarily been. And we talked about it in an earlier episode. Actually, it was our first episode about the whole stealing thing and what do you do with bootleg software and whatnot. And you were saying how you've recently gotten away from it, and I'm saying how I'm wanting to get away from it. They FabFilter just released the Pro L2, and I'm just did the update, and I'm like,
right,
I love using the Pro L.
Right.
I need to find $200.
Right.
And it's like, I'm trying to do everything I can to like not go and look for a crack of it.
Right.
Just because it's like, I love what FabFilter does and I want to support them as a brand.
Yeah.
And I don't think they screw over the customer by, excuse me, by offering their their product at like a 90% discount.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was actually talking about that podcast with a friend of mine and he's saying, yeah, but I just bought a carpet cleaner that was on sale. Does that make... And I was saying how it kind of makes people feel screwed if
right.
like, these some of these plug-in sales.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, but you didn't buy that carpet cleaner at 90% off.
Right.
And it's like, I think that if that was going on sale to 90% off, you'd feel a little bit jaded afterwards.
Right, right.
So I understand. It's like you buy something the week before Thanksgiving and then the week after Thanksgiving, it's going to be way less.
Right.
I understand that. And it's like, you should have known better.
Yeah.
But... like just like a random sale, just for round numbers, you buy something at $100 and Waves is selling it at $10 the
right.
next week, which is very possible and has happened before.
Right.
I mean, there you essentially are removing every value and mainly because you sell a product that doesn't require you any overhead.
Right. Yep.
Besides like a system that processes that sale.
Yeah.
So your only overhead was the development team.
Right.
In terms of maintaining that on your servers is
right.
no big deal to you.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, it's like, that's really my only big gripe within the box.
Yeah.
Is that you really get like, these companies will screw you.
Totally.
But it's like getting into the list a little bit, pros and cons of staying in the box, you don't really lose, if you do it right.
Yeah.
You don't lose any fidelity. And
right.
granted, people have different tones and whatnot that they inject into their plugins.
Yeah.
And it's really like what you're doing with it. It's like if you're using it, like you can tell that there's a plugin that's specifically used for mastering.
Yeah.
And prices aside and everything.
Yeah.
And then there are specific ones that are used really for mixing. Like I'm not going to use ADT on a master.
Right.
I'm
unless
just not
it needs
do
it.
That. Unless the master
unless someone says.
In which case, I would be like, that's one of those projects where you're like, you just got to hand it back. It's like, bro, we got some stuff we got to work on. However, who is it? Like, what's the company? Sonoris or
uh-huh.
that makes like the mastering compressor?
Yeah.
They have like an EQ and some other stuff. Is it
yeah.
Sonoris? Am I pronouncing that right?
That is a company, yeah. I don't.
Yeah, so it's like, as for their mastering compressor, you can chop off 6 dB and barely hear it.
Right.
And it's like, that plugin's worth $200.
Yeah.
It's like you're not getting this like GUI that's blowing your mind.
Right.
But you're getting a tonality that it definitely has its spot. And
yeah.
it's not going to impart itself on
yeah.
On what you're doing. So it's all it's all really about that. So long as you get into like a solid plugin company that's reputable and that, I mean, you know is not going to really mess with your tone, you really don't lose any fidelity by
yeah.
staying in the box.
Right.
As opposed to when you convert out of the box, some people do claim that you can lose some fidelity. But
yeah.
I find with, like, the higher-end converters that, I mean, you're really hard-pressed to tell that you left.
Yeah, and I mean, I've A-B'd stuff, too. And you can find stuff on different forums of people A-B'ing mm-hmm. things like, you know, leaving, just like running through converters, you know, in and out. And I've heard plenty of stuff where like I can't hear the difference, you know.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, like converters do have a tone.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like if you run through a Burl,
yeah.
it's going to have a different tone than like the Antelope Pro 2.
Right, yeah.
And that's going to have a different tone than the Dangerous Convert 2.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I think it's all about it's all about what you're trying to achieve, you know.
Exactly.
And that's what.
But it's like, Sam, you and I, we both run the Lynx Hilo.
Right.
And if I run out and back in, I can't tell.
Right. That's
it's
how
stupid
I feel too.
Transparent.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, and I think that's the thing is like, yeah, you can, maybe you're losing some fidelity going out of the box, but, you know, is that like the end goal of mastering? Like not to touch
yeah.
it, you know, which is, I guess, you know, even you could say like mastering, you know, your goal is to sign off. So if the mix is perfect, you're still going to raise it up volume. You're still changing something, you know, for it to be right, like ready for release.
To the proper replay levels
yeah.
and whatnot.
Right. So, you know, I think talking about fidelity is kind of like, Yeah, that's important, but also, you know, that's not like the absolute goal. The goal is not, I mean, obviously people don't really care about fidelity anyway because all they do is stream like, you know, basically MP3s all day.
Yeah, it's like then you have to ask the question, what's the actual like playback platform?
Right, exactly. And that doesn't mean we work in like MP3 format because there's pros to working in higher formats. But I think the people sometimes get really uptight about the fidelity thing. And even, you know, with you get into the cabling, like what cables do what, which I have to confess when I bought all custom cables and Megami stuff, and I did notice a difference once I swapped everything.
I recently did that, like went to Megami and AudioQuest, and I was like, holy crap.
Yeah. But within that, like you still, it goes back to like, okay, say you're missing some top end from cheaper cables, but you can just add that top end in, you know, essentially. Like instead of like hearing it with an expensive cable, then maybe you have to boost like a dB of top end. You know, that's, I guess that, like that's how I used to work. You know, I knew I didn't have like the most pro setup. Like that's just how you start out. Like no one.
But I feel like I don't know, this is getting nitpicky. It's like, it's like, do you get into the point to where it's like, so you're missing out on like some top end.
Right.
And it's like, well, you can add it back in. And it's like, but is it like,
but is the top end
once again,
gone?
Into the weeds, is it right. The same top end?
I know. Yeah.
And is it like the same top end with the same tone?
Right.
And
no,
like,
it's not.
And that's where you like really get into it.
Absolutely. That gets into the debate of like people that use different file transferring systems and claim it alters the file.
Don't get me wrong. Once again, I think I said this either to you privately or on last time's podcast. I mean, you're totally going to have those hipsters in 20 years being like, yeah, use USB 1 for the
right.
The tone.
Right.
That vintage tone.
That vintage, it's like, that inbox tone.
Yeah. So it's totally going to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, I think like, and to clarify, whenever I say that I go out of the box and I do have a converter, but I use that primarily for... with the Hilo, you can use it for monitoring as
right.
well. And then I'm just kind of setting myself up for when I go out of the box, you already have a transparent converter there.
Yeah.
And plus, I was trying to get out from the central station that I was using.
Yeah.
Just for clarification, if people are like, well, you said you were in the box, but then you're saying that you have this Hilo. So,
yeah.
For clarification purposes.
Yeah.
You have the whole fidelity loss by... or. The claimed fidelity
right.
loss.
Right.
However, I think you said something that was very interesting a couple months ago to me in that you said, when I asked this question, but even if I might lose something, I feel like what I gain is far superior and far beyond what I could ever be losing by transferring out of the box.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, I think that's kind of like an interesting point.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess
be on.
Like that's my approach to it. And my thought with it is what I'm gaining out of the box is like, it's stuff like I can't do in the box. So like I have one of the old Black Lion vintage stereo, like Masternate EQs that they don't make anymore. Mm-hmm. I have like number 37 or something. I don't even know how many they made, not very many. But it has... like vintage SingMag transformers in it, and I had it modded by a guy in Nashville to clean up some of the wiring and pot stuff. Even though Black Lion did great work, I just kept upgrading it. Mm-hmm. But that sound, the way it sounds, I can't get any plugin to sound like that. Like the low end becomes thick and the top end is expensive and you can crank it, you know, 10 dB up at 16K or something, or 15K I think is where it's at. And, you know, it never gets harsh. And with almost every plugin I have, doing any sort of movement like I do on the Black Lion, like, it immediately falls apart. And, you know, that to me is like, just having one piece of gear like that, if I only had this EQ, I would still go out of the box because what I gain from it, you could stack all the most expensive plugins in the world against this thing, and I don't think I can achieve the same thing, you know, because I've tried most every plugin and mastering plugin that's out there. I've
Well, granted, then you have to, once again, like I said earlier, you have to take into consideration, as opposed to doing something in the box, as opposed to out of the box, it's like you're dealing with like electronics at this point.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're not dealing with ones and zeros anymore. You're right. Dealing with an analog sine wave going through circuitry and
right.
Going through, I don't know if Blackline has tubes or whatnot, but it's like going through like any of that. I mean, you're going to have something that's going to be imparted. I mean, you
right.
Boost 16K at, if you do 10 decibels, I mean, you do that on a digital piece of equipment, you're going to have this digital harshness.
Right.
And don't get me wrong, it's like sometimes it's like you have for some genres, which is one genre dependent, you're going to want to stay in the box and you're going to want
right.
To have more of a digital sound.
Right.
But, I mean, 16K on an outboard piece of gear is going to do a lot different than 16K
right.
On... inboard.
Yeah, and I find going out of the box, like, the majority of the mixes I get, you know, are probably somewhat limited. Like, they've, mm-hmm. You know, people are mixing into bus compression. A lot of people are mixing into limiters. And I always request, like, you know, take off your final limiter or whatever. But some people just don't do that. They're like, well, this is the sound and that's the way it is. And they don't understand the... you know, how that kind of can limit a mastering engineer. But when I take things out of the box, I'm able to, like, introduce new transients. You know, I can bring back some punch and dynamic because I'm, you know, getting harmonic distortion, say, from the overstayer. Like, I have, like, basically three steps of harmonics I can play with and, you know, input into that mix. And when that comes back in, then I see new transients and everything. You know, like, I can recreate dynamics. And that's something that I think out of the box does a lot better than in the box. And
yeah.
I think that's my whole thing is, like, could I sell all my gear and work in the box and still have a career? Absolutely. Like, there's, like I said, there's plenty of projects where I don't go out of the box because it doesn't need it. And it's, you know, mastering, like we talk about, is all about either... you know, it's knowing what to use or what not to use. And sometimes going out of the box isn't needed, and I stay in the box and, you know, do what I need to in there. But I love the process, and I love, you know, the type of sound I get from going out of the box. And I don't know, at first I thought it was kind of like a gimmick or something, but now I'm just continually buying more and more gear because I'm in love with the creative process and touching something and hearing the sound. And, you know, some of the cons of it are, like, you know, it takes longer. If someone needs a revision or needs to send you a different mix, you have to rerun it all. But I think with me, like, I've learned to charge a rate that allows me to have that kind of wiggle room. So it's not so, like... it's not a big deal if I need to rerun a new mix usually, as long as the new mix isn't, like, totally different.
Yeah. What do you do in terms of out-of-the-box mastering notes?
As far as, like, keeping track of my settings?
Yeah.
I just write a note down, like, in Logic or Triumph, and I write down all my settings. So... that's what I do for every song. You can write a note, so I write that down, and then I have it forever. So
there you go.
I usually, too, anytime I'll change, if I, like, drastically change my setup, like introduce a new piece of gear or something that I know, like, I need to gain stage things differently, then I'll take a picture. Or if I sell a piece of gear, which I've done that, like, once, and so I no longer had a piece of gear, then, you know, I can't... if someone came back like 6 months later and needed a recall, you know, it's one of those things where I just can't
do
it,
bro.
You know. Or if it's a different setup, I can, if they absolutely need it, which has only been like once in 6 years, where like a label was like, we have to have it. I was like, okay, I'll reroute some stuff. And then I pulled up a picture before I did my overhaul. So.
Well, the nice thing about like you in Nashville too is that like if it's like a, like, if it's, like, a pretty beefy piece of gear, chances are you can track down somebody else and, like, borrow it or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I could. Like they're like, I don't know, man, just kind of missing something. Like, right. You could always go and find it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things, like, I like about being in Nashville and I've done that over the years and with clients too, is like, you know, having a gear page to me is kind of a waste because I can get you any piece of gear you want. You know, a Blackbird's like 5 minutes from my house and they have more gear than you could ever want in your life. And I can just literally walk there, get it for 4 hours, run your stuff through it, master it, and then return it. Like, I can do that. That's not a problem. So that's kind of like, that's one of the things I really like about being in Nashville is I can.
It'd be funny. Like you said, like you'd walk there. It's like you just see some guy walking down the street with like a Zener limiter or something.
Exactly. Yeah. In like a red cart or something, like a wagon. I don't carry children. I just carry vintage compressors.
It's for my gear.
It's for my gear. So that's kind of like, you know, my explanation of why I like going out of the box so much. But I don't have issues with in the box mastering. I can still master the heck out of an album in the box. Like,
yeah,
it's, I always tell people, like, use what you want to use. As long as it's making you happy and getting your client what they want, then it's a win. Like, I don't know. That's what it always comes down to. So I don't try to get too hung up on it. I just try to encourage people to, like, find what, you know, will help you be inspired and help you do the type of work that you feel like represents you. And if that's all in the box, then stay in the box. But for me, you know, after doing this for 8 years, like, I like touching knobs and I like, you know, messing with stuff and seeing how far I can take things and push things and, you know, and my clients like it, thankfully. So, but yeah. That's kind of my feel on out of the box, you know.
Yeah,
and what I gained
from
doing it.
Kind of going down the list a little bit that I had were in the box is that, you know, software is like relatively speaking inexpensive.
Yeah, it is.
If you are buying it, like compared to outboard gear,
absolutely.
Unfortunately for these manufacturers of this or developers, that it can be ripped off pretty easily.
Right.
And like the values of which can be misconstrued. And like I said, like sales, like up to 90% and stuff like that. And, but it's like also with that, I mean, like I said, there's no overhead for these software companies that they charge. They can just charge whatever they want. So, I mean, that's kind of like the good and the bad is that they're inexpensive, but then don't be surprised if you pay $70 for like a compressor and then you see it the next day, down at like, hey, we're running a sale or something like that.
Right.
It's like, just kind of know what you're getting into.
Right.
So,
yeah, and I think,
I mean, that's why I try to go with like more like boutique-ish plugins if I do use them.
Yeah.
Not because like the exclusivity or like kind of being a douche about it, but it's like, I know that they're not going to really screw around their client base as much.
Right.
And it's like, don't get me wrong. It's like I said that in the first podcast, if we do run it, that I really like the Oak sound. It's like kind of like a dynamic EQ almost. I said I really like them. And then on Black Friday, they're like, oh, we're going to, it was like 175 pounds.
Yeah.
I don't know what that converts into dollars. And then like they're like, oh, for Black Friday or Cyber Monday, we're going to take it down to 99. I'm like, don't get me wrong. I understand that. That's business. That's the nature of business. That's how sales work. That's how you get people in the door. I understand. But it's like if they were to go and say, hey, we're going to offer this for like $20, I'd be like, guys, what the hell? Like what the literal hell is right. Like, how are you doing?
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So and that's kind of where I am with that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've mentioned this before, but the big thing is like you still have to know what you're listening to and where the song needs to go or not go.
Yeah.
So like that to me is still the biggest thing. And that was like one of the guys I met with when I first moved to Nashville who kind of allowed me to shadow him, who's a really good mastering engineer. Like his first day, the thing he said, he's like, I'm going to teach you to listen, you know, and he has all this gear in front of him. And like, you know, I'm just like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to use that piece of gear, this piece of gear, this, you know, $12,000 EQ that, you know, I'll probably never have. But the first thing we did was the first day was just listen. And we just listened to everything and talked about, what do you hear? Where is it at? Where does it need to go? Why does it need to go there? Why do you think it should go there? How do you do that?
That's a great lesson.
We did like another day, which was just like, okay, now that you kind of have some baby knowledge of like how to listen and where something needs to go, now get there only using compressors. And like, because compressors have different tones and you can shape, you know, the sound of something, you can EQ something via compression and stacking compressors and limiters and, you know, between tubes and transformers. So we did that. And then the other one was, you know, get where you want to go using only EQ, you know, making things feel compressed or limited, you know, the feel of it. You won't get there, but the general direction. And so just going through all of that stuff, like, really helped me view everything as, like, you've got to know where a song is and where you want to take it. And then you have to be an expert in every tool, like, that's, you know, that you possess. So be it a plug-in or outboard gear, like, unless you know that the song needs to be, you know, boosted at, like, 32 hertz with, like, a wide Q sloping into 60 or something, you know, to get the low end right or the sub feeling right, or you need to dip out 200 hertz with a narrow Q, you know, to get some separation between low and mid. Like, unless you're listening and you know those things, like, it doesn't matter what you use. And I think that's, you know, I always want people to focus on that. And you preach that too. And it's great. Like, listen, like, number one thing you do is listen. And then, you know, then choose your workflow, be it in the box or out of the box, whatever's going to get you that end product, that's the route you should go. And you can get there both ways. You can stay in the box, you can go out of the box, you can do a hybrid thing, which is, you know, I would say I have a hybrid setup, but, you know, I've just leaned more towards out of the box, but that's kind of my feeling.
I mean, if you want to get super technical, I would say that, like, 90% of mastering engineers these days have a hybrid setup.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, normally they're going to do their de-essing like in the box just because it's so darn quick. And like the in the box limiting is so darn quick. They're going to also do limiting, like their final limiter will more than likely be there.
So. Yeah. And that's what I do. Like, I repair in the box and finish in the box. You know, so I repair before I send out, I enhance mainly out of the box, and then I finalize in the box. Because it is, like, limiters that have look ahead and, like, can oversample, it's going to beat out
any
hardware.
I think now, like, the new, like, Pro L2 has, like, it has, like, intersample peak, like,
limiting, I mean, that's brilliant. And stuff like that. Like, it's use that, like, all day. Stay in the box with that.
Well, and also, it's like, if you do, like, believe in the whole, like, normalization and the Luf system and everything, like, they just came out with a whole new thing that does all of that while you're able to read, like, RMS and VU and whatever you want to read.
Right.
Like, you're able to read all of that while you're in the box.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so that's great. I fully embrace both sides of it. And... you know, everybody should. It's all about using what you need to use to get the end result. I will always preach that. So,
yeah. So okay, like, staying with, like, pros and cons of in the box, you can pretty much have a relatively portable rig given that you have a powerful enough computer. You don't really need, like, a powerful computer. I have this laptop. It's, like, from 2011. And
yeah.
I mean, it can, I mean, for mastering, you're not really using a lot of processing.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I can do just about everything I need to do. I mean, even like my big computer, that's pretty darn powerful. I mean, you can slow it down by running. You know what's weird, too? What is it? Like, the Klangheim, like, VU will, like, slow down just about everything.
Yes. Yep.
Like, while it's running. And it's like, I love the thing, but he can't use it.
Right.
Unless, like, you have this, like, supercomputer.
Yeah.
So... but it's like, in general, you can have a relatively portable rig.
Right.
You have guys who claim that they can master with having just like an Antelope Pure 2 and like that 10M atomic clock.
Yeah.
And they do all their monitoring out of that. And it's like with headphones and everything. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, so, I think it all comes down to, like, could I master with headphones and just that? Sure. I could, but why? Like, why would I want to do that? Like, it's kind of like, you know, you go to a studio and record everything on a 57 and make an album, or you can go and use, like, a variety of tools that kind of get you probably, I'll say, a better product.
The guy's excuse was that, like, he was like kind of tied down, and he like wanted to go. He was like out in LA for something, but then such and so and so wanted to have their master cut,
right?
But he needed it like right now, or they were gonna lose the job,
right?
Stuff like that, and he wanted to figure that out. And
yeah,
the guy sounded like he was like already a pretty good mastering engineer.
Right.
I haven't listened to too much of his work.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say his name. I don't want to really promote what he does.
Yeah.
but he was saying that he created this rig that he can do whatever on, and I don't know. Maybe the mixes he's getting are so good that he barely has to do anything anyway
right.
to them.
Right. Yeah.
And he can do that.
Yeah.
In terms of monitoring,
yeah.
See, it's just so weird because it's like you need a little bit of crossfeed.
Right.
That like with headphones you're not really getting unless like I saw like he doesn't use this, but you, if you have like say like the SPL, they make like the Phonitor.
Yes.
It's like a headphone like monitoring system.
Yes.
And you can dial it in so it sounds like you're listening in a room.
Right.
And it's like, okay, maybe they're on a pair of headphones you really trust. I think there's also a plug-in that just came out. I can't remember who makes it, whether it's Waves.
Waves or, makes one. I think it's called like NX or something, Room. Or
yeah, and it's like it like models your room.
Yeah, yeah. Or models our room, someone else's
or,
room.
Yeah, or a room, and you essentially get used to that room.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't played with that.
You can master like that if you want. I just think all those arguments of like, oh, the time or like the space, or I had to master an album on an airplane or I lose the client. Like, who are you working for? Like, what? Really, like this high-level artist and label needs that album in the two-hour span you're on your flight? Like, they can't wait another day. Like, I'm calling bull crap on that because I've never seen a hard deadline, an actual hard deadline in the industry. And like one of the rule of thumbs within the industry is like you never pick your release date until you have the master done. So anybody who's like, oh, the release date's like Monday and we need it Friday, it's like, no, it's not really that day. It's just someone probably up top, in my experience, said that date, and now people are scared that if they don't hit that date, then their boss is going to be pissed off.
And not to mention like you got to have like physical production done.
Yeah, there's so many things.
Like you got a lot of junk to do still.
Yeah, so I just don't.
But regardless, if you want to operate like that, you can have a relatively portable rig. But if you have clients saying, hey, I need this in 2 hours, you probably just need to say, no, you need better time management.
Exactly. And that's how, like, to me, that approach of saying to the client, you know what, I can't get to it today, I can get to it tomorrow or Monday or 5 days from now, like, that type of, you know, approach means you're in control of your life and time. Like when I got into mastering, I got into it, part of it was because it's self-employment and I get to pick when I want to work and when I don't want to work. Mm-hmm. And I will never be the person who's like, oh yeah, I'll, you know, if it's going to interfere with something I have planned, like I just tell people I can't get to it. Like I'll get to it on this day. And I've never lost a client because of that. Like I've never, ever had anyone be like, well, screw you, dude. Like, we're going to this other guy. You can do it tonight. Never had that problem. So I feel like with the way the industry is now, like, I mean, if you want to master on an airplane, that's fine. Great. Do it. But if you're doing it because
people
of someone's—
people are going to think you're, like, assembling a bomb. Yeah. All the junk and wires you have. I mean, I don't want to plug in, like, a $5,000 of gear into like a shitty airplane socket.
Right.
It's like all that stuff's running off a generator powered by like the engines and stuff. It's like I don't want to like I don't want that mess.
Yeah.
I was actually looking at the guy's setup. Like he doesn't use like a power conditioner or anything, and I was like, man, you got some balls like taking. Because it was like right when the Pier 2 came out and right when the 10M like clock came out.
Yeah.
And that clock was like $5,000.
Yeah.
The Pier 2 was like almost $3,000.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, like, yikes.
Well, and I think that's
the
thing.
You're not even protecting it.
Yeah, it's like you do have some balls. Like to blatantly tell people like, I mastered your album on an airplane. Like, I feel like if I was the artist, I'd be like, heck no. Like, who is this guy? Like, sure, he may have done some things, but I want someone who's at least not on an airplane, listening to it properly. And I know, like, the industry, like, a lot of artists don't even know what mastering is. So it's like, you know, they don't even care. They're too busy. They have other things on their minds, which is fine. But it's just one of those things, like, if you're, you can approach, like, mastering or self-employment two ways. Either, like, you run your life and you're in control, or you let everybody else dictate your time in life. So,
I mean, don't get me wrong. He said, like, a couple times that, like, they, like, needed the master really quick, whatever. And he was able to, like, roll up to the studio with his portable rig and master it in the studio.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. That sounds kind of cool.
Yeah.
But it's also like, if you got a guy who's mastering it in the studio on headphones.
Yeah.
It's like a little bit too much snake oil for my liking.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing that. I think it's just at the end of the day, like, is that how you want to be working as a master engineer?
Yeah.
Like, do you want to always be on the fly with a portable rig working in new environments and having, like, I guess, zero consistency other than your converter and maybe your headphones? Like, if that's the route you want to choose, then that's fine. But I just feel like, for me, that's not very fun and creative. Like, that sounds like a stressful thing, and that you're someone's servant and, like, you don't run your life. So,
it sounds like you don't own your life at that point.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, what I'm trying to say is, like,
to where it could be like, oh, well, I'm going off to Thailand and I got all this mastering work to do. It's like, they still own you.
Yeah.
I don't care where you are.
Right, and I don't really care, like, how much you've accomplished either, because your quality of life is, like, you're always on 24/7, and that's a terrible way to live. Like, there's plenty of scientific evidence, like, psychology out there showing that that's not good for you. And I feel like I can even attest to that just working, like, when I first started, I was just working all the time in my own room with my gear, and I still got, like, totally, you know, burnt out and, you know, stressed out and break down. So I can't imagine, like, trying to be on, like, a flight vacation or something, and someone's like, master it now, and you're like, okay, I guess I will. Let me pop in my earbuds and pull out my converter. Like, just, like, my wife would just smack me. Like,
yeah.
It just wouldn't be allowed, which is great.
Zero, like, quality of life at that point.
Yeah. You know, you're just working your whole time. So, anyway.
Not to mention, you probably look like a tool.
Yeah. I just can't imagine rolling up with, like, a converter. And, like, I mean, maybe the Hilo. I could put the Hilo in my backpack.
Yeah.
Which is part of what Hilo Cell is, like, it's a portable converter because you can hook up a battery pack to it.
I love it. I mean, I've, like, when I first got it, I was between home and the office, just kind of learning it in and out. And if nothing else, just using it as a, like, the insane headphone pre that it has.
Yeah.
And just kind of, like, learning how it sounds.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to just take some, like, Burl converter to your house.
You may.
You might.
You might if you live in Nashville, you might.
You might. So, finishing up my list.
Yes.
So, pros and cons about staying in the box. Software quality and emulations have vastly improved.
Yes,
and
they
this
have.
This is not just the software companies that are saying that. I can attest to that. some could argue that it is a more efficient way to work, not having to worry about going in and out of the box, taking mastering notes, and keeping track of random stuff that you've done. And then in terms of staying in the box, you never have to worry about a piece of gear going down really besides your computer.
Yep.
Or, like, you, like, snap off an eye lock in the USB or something. I mean, short of that, then you're pretty good to go.
Yeah.
If you're snapping off eye locks in the USB port, you probably shouldn't have outboard gear anyway.
No, you shouldn't.
So
one of the things, though, I'll say about repair and, like, maintenance is my overstayer unit went a little haywire in a channel probably a month ago now. And I messaged them and said, like, hey, I think something's up with my channel. And they're like, oh, send it in, you know, we'll fix it. So they get it. And during shipping, the whole faceplate, like, got damaged, which I bought insurance, but they ended up just, like, repairing the whole unit, putting a new faceplate on it, upgrading the pots, upgrading everything for free, and repairing my initial issue, and then sending it back to me, and all I had to pay was one-way shipping for all of that, which was probably like $400 or $500 of work. And the thing I like about that whole experience is now Overstayer knows me. I talked about them in my blog and how I mention them sometimes, and like they're aware of me now and they know people and they've talked about wanting to like feature me sometime. And so that, like, that to me just, there's, the music industry is still so relational to me. Mm-hmm. Like all my work pretty much comes from word of mouth, you know, and I just feel like if I buy plugins my whole life, like a plugin will never break. And so, or if it does, it's like I have to log on and be like, hey, I can't, it's not finding my license or my iLock or something, which happens. Sometimes that goes down. But I don't know. There's something about like even that experience with Overstayer. I was just thinking like, man, I'm glad I have gear, because now I have like a huge company that's starting to really blow up, where like a lot of top-end guys, high-end guys are using their stuff now. And like they now know I exist and know a lot of people. So like who knows like where my name might come up now from that. Mm. As opposed to like, you know, it was almost like a blessing to have my gear break down. You know.
You don't hear that often.
Yeah, like I'm a pretty optimistic guy, and I think the world is for you overall. So like I kind of look at it, you know, kind of mystically, like it's a great thing that that happened.
You actually got me thinking, because when I was trying to get the firmware on my Hilo updated, I downloaded the most current version of firmware and everything.
Yeah.
And it had this weird clocking issue with my computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I called them, and it was like literally like 4 minutes before they were closing down like their helpline or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And the guy totally sat with me for like 30 or 40 minutes to get this thing figured out. And he's like, oh, yeah, you need to download like this one as opposed to this one. And I was like, oh, okay, because this one said like this piece of firmware or whatever it was for my computer. I don't know. It like, it was like in like the legacy
pieces
of software. Yep. He's like, yeah, but he's like, technically it shouldn't be there. It should be like right here. This is kind of weird, but this should work. And then after like that quick time, like he was like seriously the nicest guy I've ever dealt with.
Yeah.
And it's like I've probably lost a handful of licenses for plugins.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever really had a very personable experience.
Right.
It's always just like someone redirect me to another part of their website or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's nothing like really personal. Whereas this guy like took 40 minutes out of his time that he was like off the clock. I imagine he's in overtime.
Yeah.
So, and who doesn't love time and a half?
But
he was like, he was walking me through this, and he was like happy to help me out with this. And he was like explaining things about like this thing and like how it interacts with my computer and how like it interacts with the DAW and everything.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, this is like, this guy's customer service is incredible.
Yeah.
So kudos to Lynx.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name, right?
Yeah.
Say everybody ask for this guy if you have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, I like having gear. It connects me to people still. So I enjoy that. I like that about it.
And it seems like most companies, they stand behind everything they put out.
Oh, they do. Especially with mastering gear. Like, you're not making a piece of mastering gear unless you're like an ultra nerd about it. Like, you're just not. Like, no one's like, oh, I think I'll just make a piece of mastering gear today, and I don't really care about any of that. Like,
I want to start this shelf at 52K.
Yeah, like, the people that are making mastering gear are obsessed with what they do. Like, you have to be. And so that's, like, I love that. I love, like, talking to people and connecting with people that are equally as obsessed with their gear as I am about mastering. Like, it's just a good fit. And, like, the community of people who make gear, like, I'm so grateful that they exist, because they're allowing me to do my business. And, like, I don't think I can give people the product, and I wouldn't be where I am, you know, without having these pieces of gear that I've found, you know, give me my sound, you know, and what people like, you know, when they use me. So I don't know. I mean, it is like, the con is, gear goes bad, you know, and more than probably plug-in issues, but, you know, there's always a silver lining in it all. So
yeah,
that's my story about that.
So you want to go into pros and cons that you've found with having some analog gear?
Yeah, definitely. So I feel like I've kind of talked a lot about the pros.
You have, yeah.
The cons of analog gear, you know, I will say time and recall. So like that can be annoying if like someone has a different mix, or sometimes someone will send you the wrong mix on accident. And I'm sure like bigger companies probably charge for that. They're like, well, too bad. Most of the time I will not charge for that. I'm pretty gracious with people. Sometimes if it's like the third mix and we're like, oh my gosh, you sent me the wrong mix two times in a row. Yeah. Now like I'm behind in my schedule on everybody. So that impacts everything. But you know, recall is kind of annoying. I mean, I check every channel and every piece of gear every time I do a project. So like running a 1K sine wave, you know, through everything each day and making sure everything's functioning, you know, but that I've just kind of accepted that that's part of like the routine now. So I don't really view that as a con. I feel like the big reason why people move in the box, like I feel like I read from a lot of the bigger guys, is like for time, you know, convenience. It's more convenient, you know, no more recall, no more having to, you know, test out the channels, make sure they work, no more repair. Mm-hmm. And like, I just like my question of that is like, when did we have to do everything instantly? Like, where was that the issue? You know, like, and the pushback is, well, they can do more work now. They can make more money because they can, you know, if I don't have to run a full album through gear, you know, I'm not spending multiple hours. You know, I'm just listening down digitally and then working on it instantly. You know, I probably save multiple hours when I don't go out of the box. But I guess I just feel like the whole idea of like, oh, we just, you know, it's faster and we need to move it faster. We need to go faster. And, you know, the convenience of it, it's like, I guess I understand that, but like, is that really the best? Like, you want to trade that off for like your gear that you like made a career on because you're trying to shave off like a few hours a day. So that's kind of like, I don't even view that as like a con really anymore. But that what I would say is most people's con is like out of the box, takes more time. There's more variables. You have to check stuff. And therefore, because it takes more time, it costs you more money, which means you can't make as much money, you know, supposedly. Mm-hmm. So that could be a con. I mean, when gear breaks, it's inconvenient. You know, like even though the Oversteer thing was a great experience and I love them and their company and I try to tell everybody about them, like I still was without that piece of gear for like 5 days. So that was, that's annoying. And then probably cost. You know, that's probably my biggest thing with outboard mastering gear is that it's really expensive. Like, you can drop, you know, you could buy a new car or buy like a, you know, a limiter or like an EQ. Like, you can spend, you could drop $100,000 easy in gear for mastering if you want to go outboard. And that's just a lot of money and that's a lot of investment for a career that is very unpredictable and also may be replaced by algorithms eventually, you know, like it's kind of a lot. So that to me is one of the cons is like, I understand why the gear costs so much money because it's almost every mastering piece is, I think, handmade for the most part. And it's super rare and hard to find components usually. And it requires a certain, you know, skill set that most people don't have. So that's why it costs a lot. But that's a con. Like, if you want to start mastering, you could start in the box like today. You know, you could buy, I mean, you could even master with just stock Pro Tools plugins or Logic plugins. Mm-hmm. Like, for a couple $100, you could be a mastering engineer, quote unquote, and start today. As where if you want to go, you know, outboard, it's like, well, I guess it just depends on what you want to buy, but you can drop $10,000 instantly, you know, on a converter and one piece of gear, and that's $10,000. So that could be a con. I don't know. I feel like it's almost like we're asking the wrong person because I love it so much. Like I can spin all my cons into being like, well, it costs a lot of money, but it's, you know, giving me my sound that I like and people like, and so that's giving me money. And
I mean, at the end of the day, it's just about how, like, how as a mastering engineer you want to work.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I mean, yeah, that's what it comes down to.
You can call that a con all you want.
Yeah. I will say, at the end of the day, if
it's how you want to work, then
yeah. I'll say that using analog gear is a different animal. Like, mm-hmm. analog will color the heck out of your sound, like, mm-hmm. if you don't know what you're doing, or even if you do know what you're doing, like, different pieces of gear and different transformers and even different wires within it.
In different orders.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Signal chain, like, it really impacts your sound. And so if you're just starting out, you know, and thinking, oh man, I just need to get like this limiter or this mastering piece of gear, if you happen to have, you know, thousands of dollars laying around, or you want to invest into something, like, I don't even know if I would recommend that yet, because you don't even understand like what you're buying, and you don't probably understand why you need it. So like, we circle back to listening first. Like, if you want to be a mastering engineer, just spend like a whole year just listening on your setup and like fiddling around.
Nothing else. I mean, and I think I said this in another podcast. If you want to be a mastering engineer, and I'm not even going to claim to be an experienced mastering engineer, I'm just learning.
Yeah.
It's like, get the best pair of monitors you can.
Yeah.
And learn a room.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, the first thing you need to do as a mastering engineer is not buy gear. And I'm pretty sure we covered this in the last episode.
Yeah.
It is your first role is to listen.
Right. Absolutely.
So you get the best pair of speakers that you can afford,
yep.
best pair of monitors, and then you listen to how the room that you want to master in reacts to those. If you're in a
Absolutely.
Very square room, I have bad news for you. you should probably look into room ratios
right.
and how to go about treating that. But I understand constraints.
Right.
The first room that I was in was a square room, and I didn't master in that room. I just listened, and just moving around different panels, whether it's like 703, like
yeah,
or in something Corning,
yeah, Owen
or Rockwool or whatnot, yeah. and it's like you figuring out, hey, I like the Rockwool on
right.
as my first reflection as opposed to the 703, whatever.
Yep.
Or, hey, I like the rock wall to be absorption.
Yeah.
Or if you find some diffusers that you like or whatnot, and it's like, just play around. And,
totally.
And it's all about what sounds best. And, I mean, it's all about, number one, listening.
Yeah.
Getting a solid pair of monitors that can replay
right.
in a pretty high quality manner.
Right.
And the second one is your room. If you don't right. focus on those two first, you're a little bit backwards. And you'll see guys
yeah.
on social media and whatnot, they'll just have the little triangular studio stands and
yeah.
A pair of KRKs and whatnot. And it's like, listen, I understand, but it's and they have like none of their They have no treatment anywhere. It's just
right.
bare walls.
Right.
And they're claiming to be a mastering engineer. And
right.
it's like, listen, I'm not saying you're not a mastering engineer. I'm just saying that you're not doing your client any favors.
Right. Absolutely.
And it's not that you're hurting yourself. You're hurting them.
Yeah.
And...
Well, you kind of are hurting yourself because you're not even giving yourself a chance to be the best
exactly.
mastering engineer you can. And that,
that's
for
exactly
me, was a big
right.
shift because, like... I mean, I used to master in like a laundry room, like 6 years, like my studio was a really big laundry room that had
you had to take an ear break when the spin cycle
oh, yeah,
turned on.
Yeah. And I would work in that room and I had treatment stuff, but like it was a terrible room, like absolutely mm-hmm. terrible. And, you know, I did work in there and, you know, I did some good work in there, you know, after taking it out and having to reference it everywhere five times.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it was one of those things where, like, you just kind of know that you're making this way harder than it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, you just know deep down, like, man, I could be doing better work, giving a better end product, if I didn't work in a laundry room using, you know, shoe boxes as monitor stands or something. Yeah. Like, you just kind of know, you know, there's something more, and professionals don't work this way for a reason. But, mm-hmm. you know, you got to start somewhere, and you can listen in a laundry room. Like, that could be step one. Like, if you want to be a master engineer, you could work in a laundry room and just listen for a whole year of how that room sounds and how...
I mean, there's nothing wrong
yeah.
with learning a room.
Right, absolutely.
And it's like, it's kind of like, and this is like dating advice I give someone. Someone asked me about dating advice. It's like, 9 times out of 10, I'm like, no, you're going about this wrong. Because the end game of this is you're trying to find, like, who you're going to end up being with, not mm-hmm. like technically who you want to hook up with that night or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It's switch it around a little bit.
Yeah.
And turn it into like kind of make a little list for yourself of who do you not want to end up with?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, fine. You start mastering listening or mastering or mixing whatever in a laundry room. I think you're starting to compile some, like a small list of
right.
what do you not want a room
right.
to sound like.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, very quickly, you'll learn listening position. You'll learn, like, if something's weird or you're kind of, like, sitting in a phasey part of the room. Or,
yeah.
You'll learn, like, what a buildup of bass sounds like. I mean, take that room's dimensions
mm-hmm.
and throw it through, like, one of those mode calculators online.
Yeah.
I mean, and then play each one of those little... modes,
right?
Because it'll give you like a little keyboard,
yeah,
and you can play each one of those modes as you go up, and you can hear that. I mean,
yeah.
there's learning experiences to be had everywhere.
Oh, totally.
But it's like, don't expect to, like, oh, like always be learning.
But right.
Don't expect to, like, sit in a laundry room and make the best work of your life.
Right.
Especially when you're not like planning on treating it or anything else.
Right.
It's like, I would rather make work that sounds good as opposed to having a room that looks good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, that's all I want. It's like, I want, at the end of the day, for my client to have a record that completely just like they're just exhausted of ideas.
Right.
And it's like, it is what they were dreaming whenever they were writing this song.
Yeah, yeah.
Or album or whatnot.
Yeah.
So... I mean, that's what I want at the end of the day. I don't want them coming back and being like, well, this actually, like, went in a completely different direction.
Yeah.
Than I wanted it. So.
Yeah.
I guess that's my 2 cents on it.
Totally. Totally.
Take it or leave it.
That's a good word. yeah. So that's, you know, we were talking about pros and cons of out of the box. But.
And then I got into dating advice.
Yeah, dating advice. That's what we do here. You get a little bit of everything.
We have our first caller.
yeah. So, you know, out of the box, pros and cons. In the box, pros and cons. I feel like we've kind of covered it.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you have anything you'd like to add?
I'd say that if you're going to... If you're getting into this, go for, like, number one, listen.
Yes.
Like, once you've gotten the best pair of monitors that you can, don't worry about cabling. Don't worry about any of that crap.
Yeah.
Learn what they sound like.
Yeah.
And learn what they sound like in any room
right.
that's untreated. And then slowly build that room around them.
Yeah.
And keep listening.
Yep.
And you'll know when you have it.
Absolutely.
In terms of gear, there's nothing wrong with going in the box.
Right.
I mean, obviously try to buy from companies that you believe in that
right.
aren't pissing you off and whatnot. I won't advocate from wasting your money on a company that's clearly not worth it. I mean,
yeah.
anyone can say whatever they want, but I mean, I'm not going to give someone my money when they don't really... When they put out a product and they're going to go screw their customers in the end.
Right.
When they're just kind of a means to an end for me. So,
yeah.
But in terms of, say, a company like iZotope that I use a lot of their stuff.
Yeah.
I don't use everything that they have, but I'm an Ozone fan, and I'll use like an instance or two of Ozone. Like I really like, I love the EQ there. I love the dynamic EQ.
Yeah.
I love the, I don't really like the maximizer.
Yeah.
But I like the vintage limiter that they have.
Yeah.
And then like a lot of the metering options and stuff that they have, it's really awesome.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm going to invest in that company. It's kind of
like
the stock market. It's exactly like the stock market. It's like, I'm going to invest to ensure the future of this company.
Right.
So do that. Play that game smart. But once again, I have no problem with people downloading demos or whatnot or downloading a crack if it's just going to be like they're trying to figure it out. But once you start making money, I have this rule. Rule number one, don't be a douchebag. If you like it, support the company.
Right.
If you don't like it, get it off your computer.
Yeah.
So like FabFilter, the Pro L2, I'm totally going to buy it. I know a handful of master engineers love it. I know a handful of master engineers don't. I really like it. I like the capabilities, and I think that they're on the right track for that. So I'm going to totally buy that.
Yeah.
And then whenever you go out of the box, be smart about it and don't pigeonhole yourself.
Totally.
If you go out and you buy a, like first you're going to have to buy a converter.
Right.
Like no one thinks about that. It's kind of like when someone buys gear, you never think about the cables you need.
Right.
The only time you think about the cables and you're like, shit, I forgot the cables.
I know.
So, yeah, Sam, however, can go walk down to Vintage King and go get himself some cables in 20 minutes.
It still costs money, though.
It still costs money. And now you're out like $6,000 because you just spent a mastering EQ.
Exactly.
So, I wouldn't say to necessarily pigeonhole yourself.
Yeah.
Get you some gear that can handle many things at once.
Yep.
So, I'll tell you exactly what I'm going to do. Or the first thing I did, the weakest part in my chain was a central station.
Yeah.
And I'd had PreSonus just rebuild it for me, and it was okay, but like I'd turn it all the way down and you'd still hear a little bit of like music and stuff. And
yeah.
I'm like, but how can you still have this coming out when
it's
nothing?
Yeah.
So that was annoying. And I'm like, and it was only out of one channel. So I knew my channels were unbalanced too, and it wasn't anything that I could like tweak out.
Right.
So it was just like a really weird scenario because it's like how do you calibrate that at
right,
that point?
Right.
Because it's like, do I calibrate it till I can hear nothing? Because I technically can't hear anything out of one speaker, so I calibrate it so I can't hear anything out of the other speaker.
Yeah.
But how far below nothing is the other speaker that I can't hear anything out of? So
right,
it's weird.
Right.
So I was like, I'm better off just to get out of here. So I know I want to, one, go out of the box, and two, I need a better monitoring setup.
Yeah.
So I found the Hilo, which the Hilo came out in like 2011 or 12. I might be off by a year or two.
Yeah, something like that.
But I love it because in January of 2017, they just did a big old firmware update and turned it
into
a monitoring controller as well. What does that tell you? That tells you that the company actually gives a crap about the people who are buying it.
Right.
Yep. And that they're going to stand behind this thing that they made 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, mad kudos to them.
Yeah, they're awesome.
So, and then even to this day, you have people saying it's one of the most transparent mastering converters or just regular A to D, whatever you want to call it. And you have people are still saying it's like the best headphone pre out on the market.
Yep.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. Two birds with one stone.
Right.
And it's like, okay, well, what's my next move? It's like, I don't really want like an EQ because I can do a lot of my EQing in the box.
Yeah.
And it would... It's like, so what part of your chain then do you consider that you want to affect? That's the next thing. It's like, when do you want to go out of the box? So in me getting one piece at a time, I'm going to probably, my next step is going to be looking at the Rupert Neve Master Bus processor.
Yeah.
Why? Because it has one of the best compressors on the market. You have a built-in one knob limiter. You have... And you can compress peak and RMS.
Separate, right.
Or like you can choose which one you want.
Yep.
You have two channels that you can play with and you can link them. You also have the silk textures. And then you have the SFE, the stereo field editor. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, I think so.
To where you can get into depth
right,
and width.
Yep.
And all of that can then also switch both channels into mid and side.
Yep.
So it's like you're knocking out so many birds with one
stone.
You
really are. It's a great piece of gear.
It's like you just have to plan your moves.
Yep.
And it's like, if you're going to drop $4,000, on my first piece of gear, I don't want to pigeonhole myself on something. Right. I only do really one thing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're basically getting like four or five pieces of gear in one with that. And they're all excellent at what they do, every stage.
Yeah. So if you're going to do something, just think it through and just figure out your steps and make sure you have cabling when it comes in.
Yeah.
Because, man, you're going to be pissed.
Yes. Been there.
So, and don't start using it on the middle of a project unless you're going to start
that project. No, don't do that either.
So, like I said, just be smart about it.
Right.
So, I mean, that's really all I have. And so, like I said, I'm going to see about the first of the year going from in the box, completely digital, to a little bit of a hybrid system.
And
possibly, and I won't say where I'm going to go after that just because I want to be a little bit of a surprise. But, I mean, I think it's a solid route to go. And I don't, you don't pigeonhole yourself.
Right.
There's so many like avenues that you can go. And even Sam and I were talking about this on the last podcast, is that say that Sam were to get the same piece of gear, his stuff and my stuff still will not sound the same.
Right.
Just because there's a very high probability that him and I use that piece of gear in a very different way.
Absolutely.
So it's a cool world.
It is cool. I love everything about it. It's great.
Oh yeah, I love it, man. So,
well, sweet. Well,
cool. You have anything for everyone out in audio land?
I think the only thing I have to say is whatever you're having, have a good one.
Spay and neuter your pets.
Yeah, I think
who's
that's
that,
it.
Bob Barker?
That's Bob
Price
Barker.
Price is Right?
Yep.
Perfect.
Yep. Cool. Sweet.
So yeah, whatever, morning, afternoon, night, whatever y'all are having, have a darn good one. So
have a
we'll
darn
catch
good
y'all in the next episode. Take care.
See ya.
Cue the music.